It's the Two Smokes Podcast with your hosts, Thundersnow and the Wiggle Rat.
Hi, welcome back to the Two Smokes Podcast.
New theme song, new intro music.
I'm the Wiggle Rat, and this cheeky bastard right here is still Thundersnow.
Hello.
And we wanted to kind of trend back on topic. You know, we've been trying to do this season about epistemology and how do we know what we know. And T-Snow had this great idea of, you know, let's do a worked example, right? And because of an errant tweet that found its way into my feed, I forget who actually originally tweeted it, but he was saying something about, you know, people think America is great when they've never even left their home state.
Right.
Or when half the people have never even left their home state or something like that.
Yeah, I think the guy had thrown out that 40% of citizens in the United States don't possess a passport.
Yeah, something like that, which is actually pretty reliably true.
Oh, I'm sure it is, but there's a preconceived idea there that those people are closed off to new things because they have not gotten a passport.
Right. Well, and that was kind of this weird thing that kind of got me thinking. I mean, it's a good way to take an idea that you believe and make sure that that belief is actually correct.
Right, and that was the kind of the idea is, okay, so there's all these people that are making these assertions, right? Well, no, you can't know anything. You can't actually claim that anything's better when you haven't, you know, experienced anything else. You can't say that the United States is better when the people within your own country are at odds. You know, so then, you know, the people started, because I know you were in on it for a second, and that's the reason why it came into my feed, right? Because I've been consistently unfollowing people at the rate of about 10 a day.
Ah, good call, sir.
Just to kind of thin things out, right? And but you know, that thread went on for quite a bit to where people were like, well, you know, I know folks that have never even been out of the county they were born in.
That's true.
And it's like, okay, yes, but that does not stop them from having the belief that the county they're in is in a state that's in a country that represents the best ideals that they can imagine.
Yeah, and that's not a bad thing, but that's not altogether a good thing either.
Well, certainly it can go either way, right? I mean, you on one hand, you've got the people that are screaming, you know, every time something happens that they don't like, I'm going to move to Canada.
Or I'm going to
move out of this country, you know. But then you've also got the people who, from all apparent images, they're getting fucked over on the reg, and they couldn't stop wrapping themselves in the flag.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so the thought is, when the whole idea for the theme for this season came out, you know, because I still can't say that word, I copied and pasted it into Notepad and started doing some searches. And there's a guy that does street epistemology videos on YouTube.
Right.
And I don't really care for the whole idea of it. But there was a series of interviews he did with a couple of Mormon missionaries on this college campus that really kind of captured my imagination, because he kept going back to, do you believe this? Do you believe this? Why do you believe this? And over the course of, I want to say, about 3 15-minute videos, he tore one kid to pieces. Not in a malevolent way, right? But you could just kind of see the kid was shaken. Whereas the other kid, every time he would put forward and go, okay, so how do you know that? How do you know that that's the thing? How do you know, you know, which of course it's sensitive anytime you get around faith. And I would argue that the whole kind of American exceptionalism is borderline religious to begin with.
Well, and that's probably the best place. That's probably the best place where we should begin, because American exceptionalism, and really this idea that we are the shining city on the hill, right, that we really are the greatest country in the world, that takes some background building, right? We have to look at where that idea comes from.
How did you get here? How did we come to this point in time?
And that'll probably be, you know, as I set the bid for the show, that'll be how we do it. We look at what makes America America real quick. We'll look at the things in America's history that makes America unique among nations, and why there is this weird set of circumstances that makes America just so glaringly different from every other country on the planet. Then we'll go ahead and we'll take a minute and we'll look at, you know, what we got for all that.
Right. Yeah. Right,
where does American exceptionalism stand now?
What was the cost?
And, right. What are the costs and what are the benefits? So we'll do a little CBA. You're going to love it as a manager. You're going to love it. So, but and then we'll go back and we'll be able to actually return to this question of whether or not we're great, and we'll be able to do it more intelligently.
Sounds like a plan.
So let's go ahead and open up and let's talk about what makes America America. Now, I know that, you know, that there are 350 million of us, 330 million, something like that, in America, and everybody's going to give a slightly different answer for this. But I think I've kind of nailed it down to about six pretty clear tenets that really kind of defines American mentality.
Right? Do we have to click on each one like three times to get through the list?
Would you like to know more? No, but the first one we want to talk about is the fact that Americans are just really, really, really in love with the idea of freedom and liberty, and not just those ideas, but the idea that those are innate, intrinsic rights.
Right.
One of the ways that America differs from other countries is that we believe that those rights are innate. They are inalienable, right, as the document right. says. Right.
Natural rights.
Right. They're not given to you by the government. You were born with these.
Right.
Right. And any civilized society is going to treat you and assume that you have these. Put your keyboards down, folks. Yes, I know there have been horrible human rights transgressions in the past.
It's in the past, in the present,
in the past, in the present. Right, right. And I got bad news for you. Yes, there are probably going to be some more in the future.
Let me tell you a story about how you make an omelet.
Exactly. So the fact that those rights, you know, whether it's life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, or whatever you think those common fundamental rights are, we don't look at those. The government doesn't tell you you can do things.
Right.
The government tells you you can't do things. And we like that paradigm. We like that paradigm a lot.
Well, we all have a lot of confidence in that paradigm. We don't like it as much when the eye of Sauron comes on us, right?
Yeah.
Well, you are allowed to do this and this. Oh, but that one thing you really like?
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore. Smoking on the airplane? Sorry, buddy.
Yeah. Shit, smoking anywhere at the moment.
Yeah, no shit, right? One of the other things that we really like is we're really, really attached to this idea, regardless of how well you think it's implemented. We like this idea of being equal in the eyes of the law. We like the idea that if we go to court and say, for example, a cop says I did something and I say I didn't, and it's his word against mine, that those words should pretty much balance out and be equal, all other things being equal, right?
That's the way it's written, yes.
Well, okay. And again, I'll agree that it doesn't always work out that way. But I like the idea that if I'm a poor person and a rich person says, no, that guy's a prick and needs to be locked up, I go, wait, 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 no, I'm not.
Right.
Right? And more importantly, I can show evidence to say, no, no, I wasn't that guy. I didn't do that. I get my day in court.
Right, right.
So we like that. We love democracy.
We love the word. We love to throw the word around. Why? Democracy.
Well, and you know, whether I know some of you will quibble about the representative nature of our democracy and the Electoral College, and I know that various members of you, you know, have your problems with it. But overall, we really like democracy. Now, it's problematic, especially now, when the two sides are not just even, but kind of polarized.
You think?
Yeah, well, and that becomes
downright hostile might be a better way to
say it. Remember, dude, in my non-show Twitter feed, I get that shit from both sides.
Right.
I've got just as many people tweeting me Orange Man bad as Orange Man Jesus.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, no, I mean, and that's kind of one of the features baked into democracy, right? Or at least the U.S. brand of democracy.
Well, no. Because it hasn't always been that way. I mean, there have always been what you might consider political firebrands. But it has been really, really crazy polarized for about 20 years now. And it's starting to piss me off.
Oh, yeah. Well, and keep crying because it's not going to get any better anytime soon.
Stay mad and die, you salty bitch.
at this point, I think the high water mark is seeing if we can get these two old bastards on Joe Rogan to have a conversation that's non-moderated. Oh, God,
no.
Because that's what you want to do is give two politicians open mics and say, here, tell us how you really feel.
No, that's the last thing. Really about the only thing Joe Rogan could do that would actually cement his status as being anything close to a benevolent member of society would be to lock them in that room, make that room airtight, and just pipe the weed smoke in. Just do the big old clam bake and get everybody.
Well, to be fair, you're describing Joe Rogan's studio pretty well.
Again, I think he's uniquely suited to the task. Because let's face it, one of the things we've learned from Joe Rogan is that he's not smart enough to ask intelligent questions.
Well, and what's funny is his fans will sit there and say that that's his strength. He does not insert himself into the conversation. He just lets things flow. But there was a funny tweet in one of those threads last night that said that it was a young black man who had said, you know, my biggest beef with white people is making folks convinced that Joe Rogan is some kind of fucking intellectual.
You know, that's a legitimate complaint.
Oh, no, and I was like, hey, dude, you know what? On behalf, I was going to do the whole Titus bit, right? I'm whitey, and I apologize.
Dude, I'm sorry. I'm not apologizing for that, Palooka. Let me make it clear, folks. I actually think Joe Rogan, when he does stand-up, is a funny guy. But having tried to listen to a few episodes of his podcast, that is painful. That is agonizingly painful.
Well, see, I just miss the early days when it was just him, and every once in a while he'd have a buddy in, where he would just sit for an hour and a half and riff about whatever. You know, whenever a cold breeze comes through, that's a spirit. God. You know, he talk about seances and fucking alien conspiracies and shit.
My favorite, and to be honest with you, I honestly don't know if he said this, but it sounds so fucking Joe Rogan, I can't believe that he didn't say it. Where he's talking about, gorillas don't know anything about working out, so we've never really seen one at full strength.
That's valid fucking point. I would think that it's in your nature as a scientist that you should be going through the you know what's needed to get a gorilla to test that theory.
I'm not teaching Coco the sign language gorilla to fucking lift weights, dude.
I'm pretty sure Coco's passed on, but
well, she has.
And we apologize for all of you who did not get that joke. Google Coco and Robin Williams and enjoy.
Yeah. Also, go ahead and Google Coco's a lying bitch. Seriously, we taught gorilla sign language. One of the first things I learned how to do was lie. But that's a separate issue. One of the other things...
Only took the polar bears 2 days.
And that's a Lost reference. Thank you. You bring a shame into the show. You mention a lot.
It's what I do.
What we also love about America is we love the free market, right? Well, the mostly free market. We do have some regulations and some guidelines and boundaries.
There are lots of people who love it, but I think you have to be in a certain position to enjoy the free market.
Free market's tough to enjoy until you've got like your own business and you're starting to turn a little scratch. For the rest of us, what the free market mostly means is we have options.
Yes. Someday,
right.
If you're able to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you too can take part in the grand experiment that is.
Well, no. I mean, even on the lower level, just take, for example, restaurant food, right? I mean, you have the option of maybe saving a few bucks and going and eating at Taco Bell, or go eat something that won't give you just scorching diarrhea and actually eat something that's made of at least mostly meat.
Right. No, I get where you're going from.
So, I mean, that free market has strength, and we love those options. We love those choices. I'd be willing to bet we have more brands of breakfast cereal here in the United States, even now, than any other country in the world.
Oh, I have no problem believing that. I mean, the fact that 70% of them are carbon copies of some others, notwithstanding, right? Right. Here's the 14 different products that are essentially Frosted Flakes.
Well, why you're bullshitting? Because it seems to me, as I walk down the grocery aisles, it seems to me that we have fewer breakfast cereal options. Mm-hmm. It really does. And I wonder if that kind of speaks to a decline in birth rates.
No. What it speaks to is it speaks to a bunch of brands trying to be green and trying to be trying to have a identity as we're trying to help you. General Mills and a lot of these companies, right, have taken these pledges. You know, oh, yeah, we realize we spent 40 years poisoning the shit out of your children. Our bad. We're sorry. And so a lot of things have been pulled off the shelf. At the same time.
Fuck that. I want Toucan Sam and Frankenberry. I want them up on the cross right next to Joe Camel.
Well, I don't think you'll ever get rid of Toucan Sam, right? But when was the last time you saw Boo Berry or...
Yeah.
But and some of that also goes to the fact that, you know, as we talked about in some of the other episodes, the just-in-time nature of our supply chain.
Right.
Allows the folks that manage these stores to be pretty dialed in on what they should have on the shelf versus what they shouldn't.
Right.
Whereas, you know, even 15 years ago, we didn't have the kind of analytics that we have now to be able to say, okay, Steve buys three boxes of you know, Count Chocula a month. No one else buys it. So we're going to order three boxes and we're going to, that's it.
Well, yeah, until somebody moves in from out of town and buys one of Steve's three boxes.
Well, and then Steve complains and right. Then they'll dial up, right? But the thing is someone doesn't even have to complain.
Right.
All the data is there. So it will just inform the order.
Right.
Hey, if someone else bought, we need to, you know, someone else bought with a different customer loyalty card.
Right. Well, and like I said, that sort of Kanban supply chain mentality has been really good in a lot of ways, but it's not always great in the best ways.
It's great for efficiency. It's not always fantastic for customer service.
Fair. So one of the other thing we like about being American is that we are really, really keen on private property. No, this is my shit. It may not be much shit, and it may all be its shit, but this is my shit.
Exactly. This is my piece of land. This is the house that I built on it.
That's it. And you can't station soldiers here. You cannot seize my shit. Again, may all be shit. You cannot come in, the government cannot come in, and take my collection of vintage 1978 McDonald's Happy Meal toys.
They can't take your Happy Meal toys, but they can take your house and say you have to move your Happy Meal toys somewhere else.
Move your Happy Meal toys somewhere else. Well, and they're supposedly not even be able to do that without some reasonable due process.
Well, yeah, but the eminent domain laws have become quite flexible.
Yeah, they've been weird. And, oh, God.
And, I mean, let's face it. The closer your lineage is to the group of fuckers that got off the ship and said, okay, let's divide this up. This will be mine. This will be yours. The happier you are with
property. Yeah, you know, it always sucks to get here second, right? So... Oh, one of the other things that we really like, and one of the things that makes America, America, is that it really took off during World War II, but before that, there was still this notion that America's job is to make the world more America.
Right, yeah, we're going to go out and build democracies everywhere.
Well, not just build democracy, but influence the people so much. See how great it is over here? See how we're all happy and reasonably wealthy? Don't you want to be like this?
Right.
You can remember George Bush saying, no, I believe people want to be free. That's what I believe.
Right.
Justifying the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah. No, we're doing this to help them. Yeah, they're throwing bricks and shit at us, George. No, it's misunderstanding.
Yeah.
There are some bad apples, but for the most part, these people want...
Right. 20 years later, we're still weeding out bad apples.
Well, there's a lot of apples.
So, whenever we look at where these distinctive American traits, whatever these distinctive America traits are, we have to kind of look at where they come from, and we have to talk just real quickly about the peculiar history of the United States and what makes it this way. And one of the things that nobody really seems to think about, but it's really, really important, is there was never a feudal society in America.
Right. Not until about the 70s.
Whenever you go and you look at... You look at Italy, you look at Germany, you look at the UK, you look at Spain. This was all at one time, it may have been long ago, but this was all a feudal structure. There was very clearly a landed gentry, a landed aristocracy. Whereas when we showed up here, we just kind of figured it out, bought land, and spread out as we went.
Right, and I think that anybody that's looking can find examples of where that happened, but it was never done writ large. It was never kind of the model that was used here.
Right. And we have avoided a lot of the problems of feudalism by just never having had it.
Right. And never had it at scale, right? We glanced up against things, you know, company towns and little towns that were wholly owned by a family and those right. types of things. But there was never a systematic, the last in the line of such and such died off and now we've got to promote some new family to...
Yeah,
we didn't have that layer of crap.
We worked the land for the Duke of Houston.
Right.
Yeah, or exactly. Shit like that, right?
Yeah. Well, and he married into the House of Clear Lake and now as a result...
And had an incestuous love affair with the House of Kingwood.
So that's how you get Harris County to be the shape that it's in.
Yeah, no shit.
Feudalism is gerrymandering.
It's a neat trick. But one of the other things that, kind of makes us unique is we're a mostly Protestant country and always have been. Now, I know we're a secular nation, and please don't misunderstand. We are definitely a secular nation. We are a secular government as a nation.
I was gonna say, yeah.
As a people from, you know, the Pilgrims and the Quakers who got here, mm-hmm. all the way up till now, we're still a mostly Protestant nation.
Well, I mean, again, right, we can split hairs all day. The paper says we are. But we don't kind of always follow the process, right? You read the documented procedure. Now let me tell you how we really do shit around here. It really works.
But most importantly is that we didn't have... Europe went through a period of time where it had this strange division of loyalty between its government and its religion, mm-hmm. right? Between its laws and its faith. And we somehow managed to dodge that bullet. Remember, when Kennedy got elected back in the 60s, he was Catholic. And that was kind of a big deal.
Right.
Because they were worried about papal influence on the presidency.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the asshole over there is going to say kiss my ring, and our sitting president is going to kiss his ring.
I love the idea that the Pope keeps Tic Tacs in that ring, and that's why people kick it, kiss it. They just, it's like a little Pez dispenser.
Would that make it pose?
Yes.
Huh. Little communion Tic Tacs? I don't know enough about religion to be able to throw those jokes. Do Catholics do communion?
Dude, trust me. I have actively been restraining myself from educating you about religion just so you won't make those jokes.
Yeah, please continue to restrain yourself.
But one of the other weird things is that as much as Lincoln wanted us to and even spoke about this nation conceived in liberty and all this other things, up until after World War II, we were globally independent. We sort of evolved, especially during our formative years, in pretty much a vacuum.
Right.
Now, that's not to say that there hadn't been some influence from, say, France and England, especially like during the Civil War.
Well, obviously, there was a lot of influence on the Founding Fathers, you know, with France and England and several others. It's not like those connections died, right? So there were ideas taken from, you know, French politics, from English politics to kind of bolster what we were doing, right?
Yeah.
Why create the whole goddamn thing from scratch, guys? This is the Magna Carta. Have a look.
And to a certain extent, that worked out pretty well for us.
Well, I mean, nobody has ever failed by taking the best pieces of plans that worked and cobbling them together.
I wouldn't say never.
Okay, very rarely do people who take the bits that seem to work the best out of successful experiments, do they fail. Mm. But
one of the other things that's weird is that we accepted pretty early in our existence this concept of birthright citizenship.
Well, up until a few months ago, we did.
What do you mean?
No, that's been a big question.
Oh, there's
to stop that.
Yeah, people are going to argue about that. But we literally have an amendment that says, you're born here, you're American. For better or for worse, we got you now.
Right.
And I personally still agree with that idea, and I am shocked at the number of countries that don't have birthright citizenship.
Right.
I think Canada does, but I don't know what the hell the other countries are that do.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there are still countries that you can pay to become a citizen of so that you can compete for them in the Olympics. So,
are you Argentinian enough to be Argentinian?
Yeah. Now representing Trinidad and Tobago in the downhill ski is Jeff Johnson from Idaho. He bought a postage stamp size lot in Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, you know what? Fuck it. I'm good with that.
Hey, shit, if you got the money, go for it, man.
Yeah, fucking A. Fucking A. And another thing that makes America America is just the sheer size of this fucking country.
Yeah.
There is so much geographic diversity here that you honestly just aren't going to find, for example, in European countries.
Sure, and that's one of the biggest things, especially when Europeans come over, you know, for the first time, or, you know, even when you see folks that haven't been here yet, that we'll see a conversation going about American healthcare or about American this or that. And they'll go, okay, why is it so different? Why are there 14 of you having a conversation with 12 different, you know, 12 different ways of doing this thing? Oh, well, because it varies not only from state to state, but in some cases from county to county.
Yes.
And, you know, I've had several folks, I communicate with a lot of people in Great Britain and Ireland and a bunch of places, And they're like, well, you know, I could get there, but it'd take me about 2.5 days of driving. And they go, oh, really? Is it like small roads? No, no, there's 6-lane interstates between me and there.
Yeah.
Well, but, I mean, you're talking about like 48 hours. Yes, I'm talking about 9 hours just to get the hell out of Texas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Dude, if you go the other way, if you go east, that's a good 2-3 hours just to get the Texas-Louisiana border.
Oh, that's because you drive like a bitch. But I could be in Lake Charles in 2 hours.
I'm sorry. I guess now I have to make the Kessel Run or some shit.
It wouldn't hurt.
It wouldn't hurt.
Probably want to rip that plastic hanging off your undercarriage before you try it.
But that huge diversity in geography makes and creates for different problems for different people, right? Especially, for example, just looking at Texas, right? For example, up in north and central Texas, tornadoes are like a big thing.
Right.
Whereas down here,
completely different geographics. You know, when I drove through there a couple of weeks ago with Taco, and I was just blown away. I was like, yeah, we're technically still in Texas.
And it doesn't seem like it.
It looks more like Mars.
Right.
But we're technically still in Texas.
But each one of those regions has their own challenges and their own benefits. You know, whether it's the Great Plains that, of course, got hit by that whole Dust Bowl phenomenon, or, you know, whether it's California that you know, has earthquakes and shit like that.
Oh, and not to mention the ever-present conflagration.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But we all have these different issues, different problems. One of the big things in Texas is always water rights. Who owns the water?
Right.
And that's actually a reasonable concern, but we have to develop infrastructures and systems to help resolve those conflicts.
Right.
So why does Texas have a penal code that's about, I don't know, about 200 pages long and a water rights law book that's like 18 volumes? That, yeah.
Well, because one's more important than the other.
One's just flat out more important than the other. Hey, which makes good sense, actually. And something else, we have historically, because we haven't had these other things, we've been very much attached to, I think it was Marx who called it chasing the brass ring,
mm-hmm.
right? We historically, as a people, have been, I don't want to say hustlers, that sounds wrong, but we're always the people who want and genuinely, sincerely believe we can be fucking millionaires.
Right. Well, we're always looking for progression, right? We're always moving forward.
Well, not just progression, but financial embetterment. You know, for us to have a house with a room that we don't need, that's status, man.
Right, yeah.
You know, for 2 7-year-old people. This is how you get
the McMansion craze of the late 90s.
The McMansion craze of old people always driving big-ass sedans when no one's ever going to sit in that back seat. The fucking
boats, yeah, I love that. I do miss that. They just don't make those boats anymore. Cadillac and Buick are still the king of that, but they're just not as long as they used to be.
We knew a guy who used to drive a minivan and had no kids.
Well, I mean, technically, I fit into that there for a little while.
Yes, you did.
I had kids, but they weren't getting in that damn van, I can tell you that.
I don't blame you. I was in that van. I don't blame them.
I still think that I could put a Thundersnow's body removal service sign on the side of that thing.
Nice.
Would have been kick-ass. It would have beat the free candy scratched into the paint.
Yeah, because that wasn't good. That's going to get you some looks. But no, we... So now that we have an idea of what it means to be American and what are the historical causes that sort of allowed us to develop into this concept of America, this modern concept of America, I think it's kind of important to look back and kind of go, well, was it worth it? What did we get for it? Right? And we got a lot of shit really right. One of our big wins is that we are one of the wealthiest nations on earth.
Sure.
Pulling away, I know there's always going to be that one asshole who wants to scroll through the six. What about Liechtenstein? Nobody cares about. It's five dudes and a Mercedes Benz.
It's five. It's five dudes from one family.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's, well, I mean, there's the comparative, right? There's always going to be, okay, well, you know, there's this many millionaires in this country and this many millionaires in this country. I have my concern about the distribution of it, but certainly we are amongst the top of the board for wealth.
Well, we're in top 10. We're very easily in top 10 by pretty much anybody's measure. The rankings I use for this particular conversation was the purchasing power parity as defined by the International Monetary Fund.
Seems reasonable.
It is, because it accounts for cost of living and some other things. I think that's probably one of the more genuine metrics.
Okay.
Right? One of the other things that we've had a huge win on is freedom. We are still just crazy free as a country. You know, we've talked before how, you know, we have very, very specific freedom of speech laws. Right. Whereas, you know, other modern Western countries like Canada and the UK don't have. They just don't have them. The Cato Human Freedom Index ranks us about 15th. Now, there are some other things that you have to know about how that's done, but that's an okay metric. That'll do for this podcast anyway.
Sure, sure. What is the unit of measurement for freedom?
Well, they actually broke it down a couple of different ways, and some of them seemed pretty plausible. But one of the things is that one of the reasons why we're able to be so free is because we do have so much money and we are predicated on the ideas of government doesn't tell you what you can do. A government tells you what you can't do.
Okay.
And so that allows us the freedom to do all kinds of weird shit, to invent vacuum cleaners, to try building weird shit in our backyard, you know. And
I'm going to make a million.
Well, yeah, and you know whether that's the pursuit of money or whether that's just a willingness to sit on your ass and do a little fishing.
Right.
Or video games or whatever your particular leisure time activity is.
Whatever your time sink is.
Right, exactly. You can go ahead and invest in that. One of the other areas that we're just complete and clear winners on, and I don't think this one is objectively debatable in any way, we have pulling away the strongest, most well-funded military in the world.
Oh, certainly. I mean, here's the thing. We're going to top the list in anything that has to do with weapons. Making them, buying them, using them. We kind of rule the roost in that area.
Well, and a lot of that has to do, whenever you look at the American predilection with guns, a lot of that has to do because there is something intrinsically American about autonomy.
Right.
And about personal responsibility. In the end, I'm responsible for my own safety. Sure, I mean, I'll call a cop if I got a phone handy, but if I'm in immediate danger, I'm supposed to square that shit up.
Right.
And people are like, why do you have so many guns in your country?
We got a lot of people.
We got a lot of people.
A whole lot of them need a bullet.
Some of them just need shooting. Yeah, no, it's your... We're all kind of, and we've seen this upheld in court cases, your personal safety is your personal fucking responsibility.
Right.
Sure, call the cops if you can, but guess what? If they ain't answering calls that day.
Yeah, call the civil servants, because that's where you want to be.
Exactly. And we saw this, I think one of the best examples of this is in that Chapel Hill Autonomous Zone, right? Where people were literally just running nuts, and for, I don't know, about 48 hours, and then quote-unquote warlords started to emerge. And by warlords, I mean guys with guns who are willing to shoot people.
Right.
Not just, look, here's my gun. It, bang, bang. Those were my bullets.
This is my block. Yeah.
Exactly. And that I think is a very different mindset than what many countries are kind of built on and kind of brought up to believe. They're under the impression that there will always be a government. There will always be government around. You can always go and make some appeal to government for restitution or correctness or something like that. Whereas in America, we're a little more immediately pragmatic.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have enough information to really throw an active debate, but I would assume that there are some places in Africa and South America that would challenge your idea that there's, you know, people who just fundamentally believe the government's always going to be there.
Well, and but
and that, again, that's less that's less about a cultural thing and more about a class thing. Every day, all day, when people have given up, it doesn't matter if they live in a slum or if they live in the States. Hey, it's nice to be in the States because I can go check a movie to try to get myself out of the pits. But
yeah,
I mean, there's, and that's one of the things that everyone has to remember. There. That perspective is not only the culture you're surrounded by, but your place in it is going to inform your view.
Dude, the socioeconomics of it matter a lot. Matter a lot. One of the other things that we're just fucking killing it on overall and throughout history has been modernity. We are a modern society and have been on pretty much the bleeding edge of the modern world since about the Industrial Revolution.
Right. Well, and again, I mean, that there's, you know, there's this whole jingoistic, we grow smart people in this country, but I think it really kind of comes down to the whole idea of the American dream and the hustle, right? you're going to get ahead. If you can come up with something novel, it's yours. You're going to make money. So, I mean, there's a lot of incentive in this country to continue to push boundaries and kind of create those things.
And try to build the better mousetrap. And a lot of times that takes new tech. But, I mean, when you look at the big impact items in your life, whether that's the car or the internet or computers or the various cures for cancer and biotech, who has the most Nobel Prizes? We do.
Right. Well, and that also helps us. It's a lot of those metrics I compare to the Olympics, right?
Okay.
Well, and I don't want to steal a joke, but, I mean, if you look at the team from China and the team from Japan and the team from Russia, you're going to see a team full of Russians, Japanese, and Chinese. Whereas when the American team rolls in,
right,
you're going to see some Chinese people. You're going to see some Japanese people. You're going to see some Russian people. You're going to see a little bit of everything, right?
Right.
So in a lot of cases, you know, we even the people that were arguing on Twitter last night about what a cesspool America has become, given the opportunity, 9 out of 10 of them would jump on a fucking free ticket to come here.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's something that nobody even debated. I mean, as people were throwing that, but you'd be here in a fucking minute, wouldn't you?
You fucking ain't right.
Yeah, you know what? It's ugly and it's messy and it's quite fucking depressing, but it still kicks ass.
Well, so one of the other ways that we're really, really doing well is what we might refer to as cultural hegemony, popularity. I know that nobody wants to hear, well, I know that certain of you don't want to hear this, but America's still crazy popular.
Right.
I mean, insanely popular. When you think about it, even if people say in other countries don't like a particular politician.
Right.
Right. They're still going to sit there and they're going to watch Marvel movies. They're going to listen to whatever our pop music is. It doesn't even matter if they speak the fucking language.
Well, the thing is there's people that want that kind of product, right? And for a long, long time, we were the only place you could get it. You know, if you wanted to see a major motion picture, it was probably going to come from the U.S. If you wanted to listen to modern music, it was probably... Now what we're seeing is we're actually seeing that influence, the next step of that influence, right? With even 15 years ago, if you went to a movie theater and you saw a movie that wasn't made in America, it was probably an independent or an art house kind of thing. And then Bollywood happened.
Oh, yeah.
And so you see this surge, right? There's a demand that can be filled. The whole K-pop thing that's going on right now in music. So, you know, other cultures are starting to catch on to that. They're starting to realize, okay, well, wait a minute. There's nothing super over the top about Marvel movies. We can make a fucking Marvel movie. It's going to star the same guy that's in every Bollywood movie. But, you know, he'll be Tony Stark and Captain America, which would actually kind of be funny to see.
Yeah, I'm actually okay with it.
But you can see that there's a sense for the, you know, there's a need for those things. There's a desire for those things. And up until very recently, we were kind of the only game in town.
And in a lot of ways, we still kind of are. Because, for example, you look at China, for example, also, because let's face it, I've been watching Shaw Brothers movies for a long time. You know, what we used to just call kung fu movies, right?
Right.
And I watch those and I love those. I still watch those, right? As a matter of fact, I watched The Kid with the Golden Arm just last night.
Of course you did.
Well, because they're in their own way kind of like superhero movies. But, you know, those old Wu Jia and Chamber films, they were great, but they were also very low budget.
Right.
I mean, there's no kidding yourself about that. Right, so America has traditionally been where you did these big budget things, and then America figured out with China, that's like a 1.2 billion people who could buy a movie ticket.
Right, let's make something that they'd like to see.
And we're starting to see a little blowback, a little cultural blowback. You know, where, what was it, the Red Dawn movie where North Korea invaded us instead of China?
Right, well, I mean, that was keeping up with the times, right? But yeah. You certainly run into issues like the whole Mulan thing that happened in the last couple of weeks.
Mulan is a great example
where you're like, okay, well, you know, we're trying to do something, but now because it has a global audience, you have to worry about things like that, right? And especially since as you know, we keep talking about the world gets smaller. Not only did that 1 billion people see it because you marketed it there, but there are now a lot of people elsewhere in the world who identify with that culture and will call you on it in a minute.
Yeah.
17-year-old white girl from down the street will call you on cultural appropriation.
not knowing a fucking thing about what she's talking about. But what are the losses, right? We did all these things great. We just listed five things that we are just crushing it at on a global stage. But it also comes with some downside. For example, when you have a combination of wealth and freedom, as you do here in the United States, it kind of leads to a certain level of decadence.
Of course, that's the part of it I like. That's the only thing left that I'm still...
It's not just you, killer. Our brands of decadence may be different, but we love that shit. Oh my God, we consumed so much cocaine.
you name it. Dude, I know guys that would like slit your throat for three cans of lighter fluid, man. It's their thing.
But no, we have a rather large drug problem in this country. We have problems with obesity. There are even questions that bounce around whether or not whether this country has any morality at all.
Well, what's funny is the morality sliding, but so all of this freedom, morality's on the downturn, yet we're still such prudes over certain things.
It's weird, and it's really inconsistent.
Yeah, it's the separation of church and porn needs to happen quickly. I won't say church and sex, because you know what? Those priests have to have something to do. But
it's funny, because as I was researching this show, porn came up.
It has to.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that I went and visited porn sites. What I'm saying is that apparently the consensus is the best quality porn comes from the United States in the 818 area code in California.
Yep. Now, I mean, that shifted some. That's still kind of the home, right? That's the whatever the porn equivalent of Silicon Valley is.
I think it's still Silicon Valley.
I think it's actually just the Valley. Yeah, I think that's. But I mean, you know, obviously, as things became, as technology made these things easier to do, right? So now, South Florida has an industry there. There's several locations for it, but I mean, the whole California girls thing is come right out of that, right?
Yeah,
there's a lot of cultures that to this day would burn our flag in a heartbeat, but would sign on the dotted line for a couple of big titted blondes.
Well, you know, principles only go so far. You'll compromise those eventually. But one of the other things that we've gotten for this is that because we do have this freedom of speech, and because we do have these other things, and because we are reasonably well educated, depending on whose testing metric you use, that leads to a lot of confusion. I can only imagine what it must look like from outside the country looking in.
Right.
And actually, I don't have to imagine it so much, but there's a lot of infighting here for largely bizarre shit. Like you were talking about the 17-year-old girl who will point out your cultural appropriation.
Right.
Right? And, bitch, I'm using chopsticks. Everybody does this.
Yes, or, you know, you cast Scarlett Johansson as a Japanese character, or you did this, or you did... But the thing is that's kind of a side effect of that freedom, right? These people have no real natural disadvantages left, right? They're going to get their three hots in a cot. They're going to have things, you know, they've got things that they don't even think of that people from other countries would look at as that's the fucking dream. Hmm. So left with no other things that they need to naturally worry or be afraid of, there's a hole. And what do you fill it with?
Well,
apparently if you're, you know, a 20-something male, you fill it with video games and pornography. But I mean, to a certain extent, there is the rise of the Karen is not just a meme. Now, the whole use of the name Karen and all of that, that's straight off the internet. You know, that's straight off the chat boards.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the absence of fear of just about anything and the empowerment of, hey, you know what, these are our rights, we're going to take them back. We're going to assert ourselves. But no, I mean, there's a lot of people in this country that are, for lack of a better word, bored. Almost clinically bored.
Well, and the problem, part of it is the fact that it's very easy to be postmodern and deconstructionist in your 20s, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, you read all the right books, and everybody's, you know, patting you on the back about how intelligent you are, and, oh, you really get it.
Well, and what has happened is, you know, you grow up and you're taught a certain set of things, and then normally about the time you hit college, those views get challenged by either, you know, newer or more complete information, right?
If you're lucky.
Well, if you're lucky, right? And so then you start to question things, which is good and healthy, but the problem is that a lot of people will swing and kind of stick. Most of us go, you know, we'll go through a phase, well, America's not so great, and, you know, and then we kind of swing our way out of it, right? Right about the time we start getting proper jobs, right? And then this is actually isn't too bad.
Well, you know, and it all depends, right? If you leave home at 19 and go out of state and go to a college, you're subjected to so many new things at once, right? A new environment, a new culture, a new schedule, a new peer group, a new everything.
Overstimulated.
Whereas, you know, the counterparts that stayed home, you know, picked up a wrench in the mechanic shop down the way or started assistant managing the McDonald's on the highway, whatever.
Okay.
You know, they didn't, nothing really changed. They got a proper job.
Right.
They're doing their thing. But their perspective has never been skewed. So, you know, Scooter that they picked up every morning before homeroom and blazed behind the bleachers is now their CPA.
Right.
And, you know, life changed a little bit because they got older and had families and did those things. But their perspective just was, their focus was so local.
Right.
So that's where you start seeing those gulfs, right? And that's kind of the problem. That's one of the things that I think a lot of people from outside this country pick up on. Is how people can be 200 miles away from each other and have completely opposing, not opinions and viewpoints, but opposing perspectives. They live in the same country, but they have such different, you know, ideas of the way things should be.
Absolutely. And it is very much true in our part of the world because we exist in Houston, right? Just outside the city limits, I think we are. But the difference between what someone who lives in Houston thinks from someone who lives, just say, for example, in a little town like Manville or Alvin.
Right.
Or one of these sort of outlier places. Because I was talking to a young lady at pub, and just literally just sitting there and talking, and she's sitting there telling me about how, you know, Texas is so fascist and, you know, this part of Texas is so Republican. I'm like, do you know where you are?
Yeah, you might want to take a look at a few of those Chuck Todd maps.
This is one of the bluest parts of Texas, and you're standing in one of the bluest parts of that blue part,
right?
You know, just because of where you are. But the point is that this young lady, she was struggling. She was having some problems. She had chosen alternative lifestyle.
Right.
And, of course, she was dealing with some of that blowback. Mm-hmm. And it takes about 3 beers to get to the bottom of it. But
right. Yeah. No, Daddy was pissed, and nobody in town talked to me. And yeah. The one other person that was like me, we had a falling out.
Yeah, and then, you know, all of a sudden you say, no, wait, look around. Just look in this pub right now at how many people there are like you.
Right. But, you know, and that's one of the things I try to get across, you know, where you're having a conversation with someone from London and someone from Dublin, and they go, well, yeah, but I mean, we live in two different places, so that's going to be different. And I'm like, you realize that a couple of our quarterbacks could chuck a ball from one to the other. The distance that we're talking about is less than the distance between me and New Mexico.
Right.
But a lot of people, like I said, they just can't grasp that scope.
And again, it's just because the U.S. is so goddamn big.
Right. I get on a train that goes 200 miles an hour, and in an hour, I'm in France. Okay, great. I get on anything that goes 200 miles an hour, in an hour, I'm in Oklahoma.
No, you're in Dallas.
Well, yeah, okay, with all of the loading and all of the unloading, yes.
You're in Dallas, dude. Okay, but that's something else, right, is that it leads us, one of the downsides to being America is that you have a tendency to become very, very provincial. Now, how provincial, and this is actually what started this topic, how provincial you are, and we talked about this on another episode about why America's foreign policy is really the only policy you need to care about.
Right.
And that's still very much the case, right? Much in the same way that Tip O'Neill said all politics is local, you know your area very well, right? I have been running the streets of Houston my whole life.
Right.
Brief excursions to other cities aside. And I love this town, and I'll probably die in this town.
Probably sooner rather than later.
And so whenever someone says to me, well, yeah, but have you ever traveled outside of Texas? Yes, I have. And I don't want to say that I regretted it, but I was very, very eager to return home.
Well, there's a big difference between wanting to get home. It doesn't really matter where home is, right? The desire to go home is kind of programmed in. But a lot of people turn that into, I love this place. And there's nothing wrong with it. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. But a lot of people confuse that kinship and that familiarity with some kind of pride in that location. Certainly there are people who will look back and say, you know what? My family helped build this town. You know, we this, we that. I play a role in this town. I've got this. Some people have that kind of feeling, and those people have legitimate feelings of, I need to be back where I'm from. I need to be back where people get me. I need to be back where I'm useful. But then there are a lot of people that just go, well, I live inside this box.
Right.
I'm not really involved in anything. I don't take an active part in anything. I couldn't tell you who my congressman is. I couldn't tell you who the guy next door is. But I still associate with it. And I attribute that a lot to folks like New Yorkers.
Right.
Who, so you like grew up here and you've got deep root. No, I got here 2 years ago.
Right.
Oh, okay. But, you know, there was a big conversation, last week's episode with cities and whatnot.
Right.
And there were a lot of people, get here as quick as you can and never leave. And I watched an episode of, I believe it was Ride with Norman Reedus, the guy from The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And that episode was in New York. And, the people, we leave the city to go ride up in the mountains and do all that. But then, as the day gets on, we come to our senses and we get our ass back into the city. And there's just, it's almost a point of pride. And these people are strangers living amongst strangers.
Well, and you're going to, it's not so hard to understand, right? Because, we all, one of the other stats I found was like 11% of people never actually leave the state they're born in. Right. And we've mentioned it a few times, but it's worth stressing that if you live in the Northeast, especially, up on that east, on that upper East Coast, driving to another state is a trivial matter for you.
Right.
But once you break right around that Illinois to Louisiana line, all of a sudden,
You cross the Mississippi, and all of a sudden things start getting real spread out.
States get a lot bigger, and it's a lot harder to
leave. A lot of them are empty as shit.
Yeah.
Like the blank spots, the black spots on the satellite imagery at night.
Right.
Like, oh my God, there must be power outages. No, there's just no one
lives there. There's just no one there.
There's just literally thousands of square miles with nothing on them.
Well, and one of the things that I've been considering is that, I got a little time, got a little money to travel, right? And I'm actually thinking about jumping in that raggedy-ass car of mine, changing the oil, filling the tank, checking the tires, and just driving I-10 until it stops. I know it stops somewhere in Los Angeles.
Yes, it does, and it's a fucking bitch of a drive.
Would I be better off driving to Jacksonville? Because I know it ends somewhere over there.
Well, Jacksonville is probably an easier ride, but I wouldn't do it anytime soon.
Oh, yeah.
I-10's going to be underwater and under construction for a little while in that direction.
Yeah. Well, two hurricanes, it's a thing.
But no, I mean, the thing is I tend to do that at least once a year, right? I make my annual solo pilgrimage to wherever I pick, right? And I will recommend that you don't take that piece of shit car. By the time you do all those things, you can just rent a goddamn car.
I don't know, dude. Me and that car, we have a very, very Ike and Tina kind of relationship.
Yes, it beats you often. Yes.
See, I'm so glad you said off 10.
The problem is that you tend to believe that you're Ike in this situation, but you're Tina all day long. Why you made me hurt you, baby?
Eat the cake, anime. And there's also, one of the other things that we're really pretty bad at is we are really kind of bad at income inequality. right? Because we have these free markets that we love, and we have this freedom that we love, and we have this really big predilection with private property. Mm-hmm. There are winners and losers in the economic game.
Sure.
And when they win, they keep their winnings. And we think that that's completely okay, because I want those rules wide open for when it's my turn to
win. Yeah, when I win, I don't want anyone to come after me.
I don't want anybody chinging my shit, right? But that has kind of led us to a pretty big and serious problem with income inequality. And that's getting to be more and more of a problem. And more than that, it's a problem that doesn't really seem to have a good solution.
Well, and it's something that is a very American problem. I had a friend come here and visit from Germany, and the thing that they were put off by was how many empty out-of-business buildings there were just in this area.
Right.
And I was like, oh, well, you know, you think that's bad. You should look up Detroit. He said, oh, is there a lot of closed-down stores? It's closed-down city.
Right.
Dude, we just, okay, that didn't work, and we left. I'm like, well, yeah, but why isn't this space being used? Because there's still plenty of fucking space, man. There's no... You know, we were driving down past my neighborhood, and they were building a new medical center. And he's like, that's a tan stucco building that's being built down the street from an empty tan stucco building.
Yep.
Yep. Exactly right.
Yep. The difference is, that one's the new one.
Well, he's like, well, yeah, but why didn't they build it in that? Well, because the guy that owns that wanted too much money, and he ain't going to let it go, because in the back of his mind, someday that shit's going to be worth his ticket.
All he's got to do is hold it.
Yep, I'll just keep holding on. It'll never be worthless.
And again, we saw the same phenomenon when we were in New York.
Right.
So much unused space. Okay, so there we have it. You know, we've discussed now what makes America America, what happened in history to make America, and one of the things that we won and lost on. So now we kind of have to turn in these last five or ten minutes.
Yeah.
We have to go, so are we great? And how do you measure that, right? So one of the things that we've been doing, for example, in the last segment, was we compared ourselves to other countries.
Right.
Right, you know, we're 15th on this, we're top 10 in that, you know, we're this, we're that, we're whatever. And that is an okay way to do things, but because America is such a peculiar place and has had such an odd history, it's not very easy to compare apples to apples.
Right. Well, and especially even with those gradings, right, there are people that will never believe that you can get an apple-to-apple comparison because we're the only apple in the bushel.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where I think a large part of the perception problem comes from with Americans, right? We're loud. We're pushy. We'll get off a friggin' train in Paris and go, well, where the hell's the McDonald's? You know, that kind of thing. That's kind of...
And the only French we know is Royale with cheese.
Exactly. And we only know that because of that shitty-ass movie.
Right.
But no, I mean, that's... There are people who are willing to believe that. There are people that have never seen a single one of these rankings. They've never researched anything. You know, they may have had conversations with someone from outside of the state that they live in or the country that they live in. But their opinion is informed by politics. It's informed by media. It is informed by, you know, Toby Keith albums and pickup trucks. And
well, and this is the deal. One of the listeners, I don't know if he still listens to the show, but Stefan Loewenberger, Encore. I love talking to that guy because he's in Switzerland. Right, and he tells me, no, this is how it's like here, and I tell him what it's like here. And
right,
we have this great exchange of ideas, and you try to bridge those gaps, right? So you can actually, because maybe reading the CIA fact sheet on a country doesn't really tell you a lot,
right?
But talking to a dude on the street,
well, and it's negative reinforcement, right? The CIA fact sheet has been written to warn you of the threats you're going to face.
No.
It's not a tourist guide.
I'm talking about if you just go look at the CIA fact sheets, it's more of a geography, how many people there, what's their economy like, things like that. It's not like, no, that guy's clearly a threat.
Oh, I thought you meant the travel warnings.
So oh,
the U.S. government puts out, here's the countries where you shouldn't be traveling.
Don't go there.
But no, I mean, the thing is it's good to have those comparisons. And I think that, you know, if we could take 5 minutes, you know, threatening to bang each other's mothers and do all these things while we play video games with each other, you'd realize that, you know, you're exposed to a lot of other, a lot of people from outside of your scope, right? From outside of your zone of familiarity. But that's almost becoming taboo now.
And see, that's weird. But at the same time, I am amazed at the number of people just on my Twitter feed, just on my non-show Twitter, who are from Canada, who have remarkably strong opinions about American politics. How many people I've seen on Twitter from Africa, from, you know, France, from the UK, who have just phenomenal... No, I dislike insert politician here.
Right.
Like, why do you care? Well, and it's because American policy affects the world, and I get that they've got at least a little skin in the game, but maybe that's not really so much your problem.
Well, but and that's part of it, right? Well, Americans, they are uneducated. What are you basing that on?
Right.
Well, most of them only speak English. Okay, see, the ability to learn another language is not to be confused with the desire to learn another language. Well, I speak six languages. Okay, that's great. I have no idea who the president of your country is. Do you have a president, or do you have a king, or do you have a prime minister, or do you have whatever? But that's the thing, right? The entire world can look at the U.S. and absorb that culture.
Right.
But then the U.S. is expected to look back at everybody else and somehow find a balance between all of these, right?
And that's actually, it's kind of challenging. You know, I, of course, born and raised in Houston, I speak a pretty good amount of Spanish. And there was this comedian who did this joke on this documentary called Can We Take a Joke? Uh-huh. And they literally made this guy, you know, change his joke for America's Got Talent or some bullshit like that. And the joke he has was, why do your parents think I'm dumb because I only speak English? I'd be better off learning Braille because right. It could happen. I could actually go blind one day, but I'm never going to wake up Mexican. Which I think is a great joke. And it kind of encapsulates that sort of that provinciality, that local mentality that we have as America.
Right.
Because we do reach out and affect everywhere. And let's face it, ultimately the end game is to make the planet America.
Right.
Right.
God bless us. Holy shit.
Oh, no. I look forward to it.
Us magazines and Weight Watchers fucking microwave meals as far as the eye can see.
Fucking A. But one of the other things when we're comparing ourselves to other countries is that we have to look at what they have and what it would, those things that we like, what would it cost us to affect that change? Right? For example, you'll hear a lot of the Nordic or Scandinavian countries, you know, and they have these, well, rather steep tax rates, right? But they've also got a pretty cushy social safety net.
Right.
Well, but that comes with a very, very high tax burden. So what does it cost to get that, and do we want it, and would that even work here? Those are legitimate questions to ask yourself. They seem to be pretty homogenous in China, but that requires a level of top-down control that maybe that's not the kind of homogeneity that I want.
Right, yeah, exactly. Well, it's amazing how well the trains run when the penalty for not getting there on time is so high.
Is steep and severe, right? And one of the other things whenever you're comparing us to other countries is try to note the cultural differences, right? Probably best exemplified by the great mask debate that's gone on because of COVID, right?
Oh, God.
Well, again, I don't want to bang on too much, but there's this, well, no, Asian countries did really great with COVID because they all wear masks. That's not really how that breaks down, and you applying tiny paper muzzles to a bunch of Americans is just going to piss them off, and it's pissing them off right now.
Yeah, I mean, especially around here, the COVID experience is done.
Oh, very much
so. It was decided. This was the first weekend where the malls were packed, the freeways were packed. You know, I got up at 5:30 in the morning on a Saturday and had to wait in traffic to get on the freeway.
Oh, yeah.
So,
people got sick of it.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's the other side of the coin of that. Here's this amazing amount of freedom that, you know, okay, well, we're going to restrict your freedom just a little bit for the public good. Everybody pretty much got in line. But now at the 6-month mark, everyone's like, fuck you, we're done.
Yeah, we're done. We're over it. We're sick of it. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Right. And the simple fact of the matter is when you look at the data, and like I said, I don't want to bang on this too much. If you look at the data, you can tell we're pretty much done with this. There's still a few places, especially in the Midwest and Idaho, that are still wrestling with this thing. But they're so low populated, they'll be done with it pretty quickly.
Right. But so, I mean, you've got you've got those differences for sure.
And like I said, comparing us to other countries is difficult, but I suppose you can do it in a limited way as long as you keep those three things in mind. One of the things that I think that we really, really suffer with is comparing ourselves, comparing America today, not to the America of tomorrow, because we're all pretty much in agreement that America is better now than it was yesterday. Right. And the more yesterday,
I think there's a lot of people that would disagree with that statement right now. I don't think they would be able to provide a lot of examples other than to hammer on about their one thing.
And that I know that there are some people out there who believe very, very devoutly in Make America Great Again. And there I don't really have a problem with returning to certain tenets of what I think made America great in the past. I'm okay with that. But overall, you have to admit this country has gotten easily wealthier and better educated and healthier, with the exception of the obesity. We're living longer. We're living better. We're certainly living more equality.
Well, we're living longer and we're living better, which is what's attributed to the wealth. We're taking so many fucking prescriptions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
At the end of the day, there are a lot of people wearing red hats who want to get back to a time that for most never existed. Unless you lived in a very small town, you're having a Norman Rockwell flashback.
It's kind of irony that a lot of that mentality of this look back and remember how great America used to be, while steadily ignoring how great America's gotten, is also kind of steeped in, I don't want to say tangential, but there is some overlap between like that and like John Cougar songs.
But that's how the FUD is spread. You know, don't recognize the things that are great about now. Put your rose-colored glasses on.
Did you just say FUD, fear, uh-huh, uncertainty, and doubt? Uh-huh. Nice. Okay, we'll go with that.
But I mean, so right, was it Goebbels? Just keep telling the lie and eventually they'll believe it.
Yeah, no, they won't.
No, I mean, there are quite a few people, right? The folks that are depressed, the folks that consider themselves less privileged.
Right.
These people are chomping at the bit to buy your lie.
Yeah.
Because you're appealing to them. You're stabbing them in the fucking back. You're using them poorly and putting them away wet when you're done the whole time you're doing it. But they are very glad because they are part of something. They are going to be the change they want to see.
In the world, yeah.
And if you were to quote that at them, they would call you a socialist bastard and send you off.
But the thing is that whenever we talk about those, we have to talk about comparing ourselves to what we want to be. What are our aspirational goals? What's the America that we want to see in the future? And as you do that, you need to start making some seriously numeric arguments, right? For example, one of the things that we'll constantly hear is no child left behind, right? Wait, no child? Because, I don't know. Zero is a pretty low number.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be children left behind by design. That's the way the system works.
Well,
and let's face it, some of them need to be left behind.
Well, and some people are like, no. Anything for the children. We'll do this. We'll do that. We'll do the other. And you may still not. There shouldn't be one hungry mouth in the United States. We grow so much food.
We throw away food. Yet there are hungry people. There are people right now somewhere in this country that are losing their job,
mm-hmm,
for taking home the leftovers rather than throwing them away. Yep. That is America in 2020. And to be fair, that was America in 1990 as well.
That was America in 1986 when I was working at Popeyes.
Yep. So. But I mean, so here's the thing. The vision has fragmented. What we're going to see is deeper cultural issues across geographic areas within the country because everybody's got a different vision of what this country should be.
And we have historically done a pretty good job of building coalitions across those lines, right? Whenever it comes to voting, for example.
So it's what I love about mathematicians. They can extrapolate things so far back that they can go, well, no, we generally do a good job. Anything above 50%, right? We only kill each other at a rate of about 6 out of 10.
Said the manager who's quoted Pareto analysis more than once.
Hey, dude, I haven't been a manager for 3 years.
You still have the stink of it on you.
I'm a firm believer in a ruling class. Ask me why.
because I rule.
Goddamn right. And I'm just going to point out to all and sundry that your fucking guarantee last week was you were going to get this show under an hour.
I know.
Read your other six bullets.
So what you really have to do whenever you set these aspirational goals and you try to reach out, try to declare some kind of victory condition. For example, if your goal is racial equality, try to look out and try to set some goal for that. If, say, Black America is 15% of the population, are you saying that 15% of Black people should be CEOs? Are you saying 15% of the people you see on TV should be Black people? Whatever your vision for African Americans is, you know, go ahead and set that. But then you have to understand that when you set those goals, when you're there, you kind of have to start dealing with the fact that maybe the job's done.
Yeah, I don't know that there will ever be an end to that job.
Ah, see, and that's the deal. Having talked to people on Twitter, they'll tell me, no. Equality is an ongoing process. And I respect the argument, but when I ask the girl, well, you know, how many is too many? How many would you need to see of this shade or that shade or this culture or that culture before there are, you know, is it, do I have to go find, you know, the one-legged lesbian Eskimo?
Right, but that's a problem, and I won't say it's strictly an American problem, but it's damn sure more prevalent here.
Yeah,
where we like to do these false equivalencies. Well, you know, only 3% of the Fortune 500 C-suite are women. Okay, what percentage should it be?
Yeah, well,
we should be 50%. Why? Why should there be 50%? What is it about female CEOs that make them so good that half the company should have them? Well, we represent X amount of the population. Okay,
yeah, fantastic. But you don't represent 50% of the CEO candidates, viable population.
Right, but that's where the issue is, right? So there's a constant push to try to throw these numbers out, and in a lot of cases, the numbers don't the numbers that they can use equal easily are negative numbers, right? X number of people of this race are killed by cops every day. X right. number of these people. It's the fundamental difference between a young Black male who's committed a crime versus a young white male who's committed a crime. And you'll see it painted constantly, right? That, oh, well, they'll bolster, they'll do everything they can to make the white kid look good and the Black kid looked like a criminal. And I went, okay, who's they?
Yeah, let's start there. Who's the great council of they?
Well, you know, the media. Okay, so the media is doing it. So you're not saying that the government's racist. You're saying the media is racist. Well, no, I'm saying the government's racist because the media is just reporting it. Okay, but wait a minute. When I asked you who they was, you know, you said the media. But that's what we love to do. I can find you people that will literally pull, you know, just idiotic numbers out of their ass, just stupid things to try to prove their point.
Right.
That's not solely an American thing, but we certainly suffer from it.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the reasons, because we do it so loudly and we do it in a way that judges other people's ways of doing things, you can see where we might have developed a reputation as the belligerent drunk.
I can kind of get where people on the outside would look in at America, or even the people inside America would look at other Americans and go, wow, these people are all fucking crazy. It's not that they're crazy. It's that they just have a very, very different. Okay, some of them are crazy. Let's get past that.
But some of them are, but they are beneficiaries of the fact that they're not having to go out and work 20 hours a day to get a meal and sleep for 3 hours. These people are, I don't want to say pampered or lazy or any of the, but all of those things apply.
It certainly can apply. Some of these people have a tremendous set of privilege. Like, you know, we like the many of the protesters that we've seen, right? Because how many times have you seen like a reasonably orderly, but obviously angry group of Black protesters, you know, chanting Black Lives Matter, and then some scrawny ass white kid
right
with a skateboard wants to come bust a window.
Right.
And that's a very strange dynamic that we see.
But you see in a country where Was it last week? They were protesting outside Nancy Pelosi's house. Or not Nancy Pelosi. I'm sorry. Mitch McConnell. The news showed a clip of probably 24 people outside McConnell's house screaming, "It's not funny. Give us our money."
Okay, that is actually a little funny.
Which is the most American form of protest. Keep in mind, this was happening at 2 in the afternoon on a weekday.
Oh, God.
And that's I mean, literally, there were people that were in their work uniforms. Standing outside wanting to know where their extra $400, extra $600 was. So that's I can look at us from inside and see that we've become spoiled assholes. But don't you fuckers outside say it.
Because we still got that really strong military. Would you like some freedom?
Yes. I mean, it's been a little while since we reminded anybody. But the threat is always there. We're angry. We're impulsive. We're petulant. But we have our fingers on the trigger.
What is it that guy says in Boondock Saints? We're kind of like 7-Eleven. We may not always be doing business, but we're always open.
Goddamn right. Goddamn right.
All right, you know what? I think we're going to go ahead and skip the rest of these bullets, dude. Sorry, folks. You're not going to get that part of the show.
You will not get to hear the brilliance that is the rat's last few bullets.
Nah. Yeah, you can miss that. You've had enough of my brilliance for one day.
But at the end of the day, if you're an American, you know, we challenge you to think about why you believe what you believe about this country. If you're not an American, the same challenge to you. What is it that's got you so wrapped around the axle that you believe these things? I don't care if you have been here or if you haven't been here. This is way too big of a country with way too many different types of people and way too many differences to be able to go to a coastal city for 3 days on holiday and come back and say. So, think about how you know these things that you hold so firmly and perhaps challenge them. Come to Houston. Come see us. We'll buy you a beer.
Yeah. Actually, we are that cool. And I got a great spot as soon as it reopens.
As soon as the governor gets off his ass and lets it reopen.
What a poor choice of words.
You know what? That wasn't even planned. But now that I think about it,
what a poor choice
I'm
going to
fucking
words.
Stand by it.
Oh, shit, dude.
We should probably roll out of here. What do you say?
Yeah, I think we're about done.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for this week. Turn in next week when the rat guarantees to only go 1 hour and 30 minutes. Until next week, I'm still Thundersnow.
And I'm still the Wiggle Rat.
Peace.